This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Good Tuesday afternoon, and welcome into Grant and Danny. It is April 9th, 2024. We are live in our Half Street studios, taking you all the way up to 6:30 today. Right here on the Fan. Got your double play at 3:45 and your blitz at 4 o'clock. Max Chadwick, who breaks down the NFL draft for PFF, joins us in 1 hour. Danny, we're 16 days away from the NFL draft.
Little eclipse yesterday. Get us some springtime. Here you go, spring. How are you, spring? You get going. That a way to do it today, springtime. Announce yourself with authority. But I like it, man. Crowned a natty champion last night. Draft is hot and heavy at this point. Nat season fully underway. Caps in the stretch run. Big one tonight. I like it.
Beautiful day.
Gorgeous.
Right.
Gorgeous.
Awesome day. I extended the walk around the Navy Yard today. I actually walked the full loop around Nats Park.
Oh, boy.
Just to, you know, go out and experience a little weather.
Look at this.
I was like peering into the ballpark as if I hadn't been there for months. Just kind of like, it was just a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And the boys have been in San Francisco for a game.
What's going on in there? I'd like to see.
It was good to make the loop around the ballpark on a pleasant day. Enough with the cold weather. Enough with the winter. It's time. Pleasant. Comfortable. Decent. Take your kids outside. It rained like all last week. It's been awful. But there's a lot to dive into today, so let's get after it. You mentioned last night's national championship game. How about the UConn Huskies? Mm. That's the best two-year run in college basketball in my lifetime, maybe ever. I'm sure that there's schools before I was born that strung together 6 and 7 titles in 8 or 9 years or whatever. But for UConn to win its 6th national title last night the way it did, with the same blueprint against Purdue, frankly, that it implemented against Alabama. Tight game early, getting all it could handle for the first several minutes. Rather than making adjustments, they stay the course and they pull away. 75-60 win, back-to-back years they win the championship. First team to win titles in consecutive seasons in college basketball, Danny, since the Florida Gators in 06 when they beat George Mason University in the Final Four en route to the title with Joakim Noah.
And Al Horford. Horford and company,
And then they did it again in 2007. But since then, we have not seen a team go back-to-back. And not only did UConn do it, but they made it look easy last night.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, as you said, this is what they've done throughout. I mean, there are times where they just are way better than somebody. I guess they're better than everybody. But it's a back-and-forth game. And you're going, Purdue is in this. Zach Edey is eating in the first half. I think at one point he's like 8 for 10 from the field. And they're having a tough time. And, you know, a couple big buckets here and there. And it's tied. It's a 2-point game. It's 4 points. It's never really out of hand. And it feels even. Then you look up. UConn's up 13. That's the story to me. It's this relentless, never-ceasing effort, unselfish, moving without the basketball, playing great defense. The analogy I'd always use is, in pro sports, sometimes you could put a hand in Kobe Bryant's face. If it's his day, it's going in, right? All you can do is the best you can. And that's how they defend it, right? All the time. They make it difficult for you. You might knock a shot down. They're undaunted. They don't hang their heads. They never whine about it, grouse about it, pout about it, make it a bad call against them. They are a never-ceasing wave of energy and effort, and they play together and such an incredible level. It's a marvel to watch.
Well, last year when the Huskies ran the table in the tourney and won the six games to cut down the Nets, they won those six games by an average of 20 points. Statistically, that's one of the most dominant tournament runs in history. And then they lost the vast majority of the players from their top 7-8-man rotation last year. And with a pretty different group, they come back this year, and they were more dominant by the numbers. Last year, they averaged a 20-point win in the tournament. This year, 23.3, if you go all the way back to their opener in the 116 matchup. They averaged winning by 23.3 points. In fact, every one of their wins in both years, that's 12 consecutive tournament games. We're talking about Final Four games, semifinal. You know, the national championship game against the best there is for you to play with the title on the line. They have won by 10 or more points in all 12 of those games. And this year, the closest it got was 12 points. But you mentioned Zach Edey. He's amazing. You know, the start of the game for Purdue, I thought, was really, really good. Because Edey comes out, and he was just going one-on-one with the big for UConn, Klingon. And they basically decided to start the game, we're going to allow our seven-footer to try to get on his left shoulder because he's going to bounce the ball, dribble, go left, and then come back around for like a hook. We're just going to let him D him up, and we're going to give up some points. I thought they were going to make an adjustment because Edey was eating their lunch. He had 14 points 8 minutes into the game as they were even at that point. They had a narrow lead with like 7:50 to go in the first half. Timeout was called. He's chirping at the bench. And it seemed like Danny Hurley was going to have to make a major change. They didn't.
They never had to.
They just parred the course.
Yeah. Well,
here's what they did, though. They said, give Edey whatever he wants. He's getting two at a time, not three at a time. We're going to defend the perimeter. We're going to defend their shooters. He'll get his 25 or 30, which, by the way, he averaged 25 points a game this year, which is incredible. So they said Fletcher Lawyer, Braden Smith, Lance Jones, Mason Gillis, all those guys that hit the threes, not tonight. Purdue only attempted 3 3-pointers in the first half and, in fact, made one the entire game, 1 for 7 from distance. You don't see that in this era.
No, I think it may have been a transition three as well from Smith.
But only 7 attempts doesn't happen.
That tells the story.
Because they basically said, don't double-team Edey like everyone else tries to do to get him to kick the ball, and then you get an open look, somebody's open somewhere. Let him score. He scored 37 points. They still lost by 15. It was such a great plan. It was executed so well. Hurley's unbelievable. That team is awesome.
And the patience to stay with it, as you said, when adversity's striking. Because, like, you have an idea. And, as you said, I think it was like 14 points in the first, you know, handful of minutes before the first TV timeout. There might be some confidence shaken in there. There might be a, hey, are we sure this is the right plan? They never waver. They know that, again, the analogy I've used for them is they're like a boa constrictor. Like, they know they're going to get you. You might get some shots in. You might have a lead. You might be tied or close. Eventually, that vice is going to squeeze, and you'll be looking up at the scoreboard down double digits. What an incredible run they've been on. I'm fascinated to see what's next for Hurley. Because you know as the musical chairs of coaches happens, someone's going to go, let's go pay that guy $15 million. Let's see, right? And UConn has been wildly successful, not just recently here, but over the years. They're up there now with the blue of the bluest bloods in terms of national championships with a bunch of different runs under Calhoun and company. They're now, you have to consider them among the UCLAs, the UNCs, the Dukes and company. And yet another, by the way, championship for the Big East. That's two in the last, 4 or 5 years for the Big East.
That means Georgetown's good, right?
Isn't yeah,
that
totally.
How that works? 6 national titles for UConn. And in the last quarter century, they've accomplished more as much as anybody else. I don't think Hurley's going anywhere. I'll just take him at his word. I mean, last night, he answered questions about the Kentucky job with conviction. It would have been really easy if there's any thought about making the move or your agent's talking to them or whatever for him to just downplay it or no sell it and just say, guys, I'm celebrating with my team. We just won a national title. But he didn't. He talked about trying to go for a third. He talked about if I went to Kentucky, I'd have to get a divorce. Like, my wife isn't interested. I mean, those are pretty serious ways to answer that question. So what's next for him? I think a third national title. I don't know if it's next year or the year after, but I think he stays
at UConn. I bet on
UConn
that guy, yeah.
As a reminder, he interviewed for the Georgetown job when they gave it to Patrick Ewing. Just an aside. Not really important, but just not a sermon. Just so everybody knows, I believe he was the runner-up to Patrick Ewing.
That one.
Trying to come to Georgetown.
Man, that information is a that's interesting information, Grant.
Just so everybody remembers.
Should remember that.
Let's talk hoops at the NBA level. Wizards back in action tonight. I was digging in on Denny Avdia because he's been awesome lately. So the Wiz are at the Timberwolves this evening. Minnesota's a 54-win team trying to get the one seed in the West. 8 o'clock tip-off this evening for the Wizards. Denny Avdia in his last game against Toronto over the weekend. 32 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. He also had 3 blocks and 2 steals. I'm going to say that line again for Denny. 32, 10, and 5 with 3 blocks and 2 steals. Only one other player in team history has ever done that. Do you know that?
I didn't.
Elvin Hayes
would be the suggestion.
Twice in February of 1975. No one who's ever played for the Bullets or the Wizards, other than Hayes, pre-Denny over the weekend, has gone 30 and 10 with 5 apples and then 3 blocks and 2 steals. And I was looking at this story that Chase Hughes wrote about the season that Avdia is having. If you look at his last 41 games, which is a pretty big sample, that's half of an NBA season, 17 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists. He's shooting 52% from the floor with 40% from deep. He's become an excellent player.
This is what they had in mind, by the way, years ago. It's taken a minute, for which happens when you draft a teenager from a foreign country a lot of times. Again, our eye line is always ruined when a 19-year-old walks in and is immediately an all-star or otherwise. But he's been scoring consistently in double digits really since a couple of months into the season, right? Where it's not just standing and waiting for someone to do something. He's like a catch-and-shoot guy, which has never been his game. He's got a little bit of versatility. There's a little bit of Swiss Army knife. He's got some, you know, a little bit of R.J. Barrett to his game, a little bit of, you know, some Scottie Pippen. I realize I'm comparing him to players that are much more accomplished, but there's a little bit of everything. And as he's gotten stronger, been able to go through some contact, he's not just standing around waiting for stuff to happen. You put the ball in his hands, he can create some things.
Totally.
And you're seeing it happen. It's really cool to watch him blossom.
So the last 41 games, he's averaging 17 and 8 with 4 assists and shooting over 50%. If you look at his season totals this year, Danny, about 14.5 points and 7 rebounds with 4 assists. If you look at the history of the organization for guys that averaged 14.5 points, 7 boards, 4 assists, shot 50% from the floor, hit 37% of threes. Nobody's done it here since the 90s. Chris Webber in 96-97, who would go on to be one of the best players in the NBA. That's the last guy to have a year statistically where he can do as many things as effectively as what Denny does. And on top of Webber, who did it twice, most recently, as I said, in 96-97, only 4 players in team history have ever had the year that Denny's having. All of those guys made at least 2 All-Star teams. So I don't know how to say it other than that to quantify Denny Avdia's legit. I mean, they've unearthed a gem here to hopefully go along with whatever they're adding at the top of the draft board the next couple years. I think Bilal Coulibaly has a chance to be a really good player. But Avdia, who goes on the last regime's record, not this new group, so wherever you're at, shout out to Tommy, who's no longer with the Wizards, but he's a stud, man. And they play again tonight. You want to get a look at him, 8 o'clock tip against one of the best teams in basketball.
And again, to this regime's credit, they identified that and extended him. There's no ego there. There's no, well, he's the last guy's problem. Like, you know, or the last guy's mistake.
That's a good point.
We'll find it.
They get credit because they paid him early, and now it looks like a really smart, good contract.
Yeah, in the 27-28 season is under contract for $11.8 million. That's, you know, good offensive guard money in the NFL.
A bargain.
I'll certainly take that with this level of production and the arrow trending up.
The more important, from a postseason standpoint, of the games in D.C. sports tonight, going to be played by the Caps. They are at the Red Wings in Detroit. Puck drops at 7 o'clock, a little under 5 hours from right now. You can hear the game right here on 106.7 The Fan initially, I guess, because the Nats are on late in the evening and then over on 99.1. John Walton will be on the call. But the Caps have to win tonight to keep their playoff hopes alive. If they lose to the Red Wings, they're not going to be mathematically eliminated, but it'll end the portion of the show where day in and day out we're telling you this game is huge because they have a chance to make the playoffs. They got to win tonight or it changes the entire math problem. They're 1 point behind Detroit for the last wild card spot. Who they play, a regulation win is almost as important, frankly, as a win. Like if you win in overtime, you gain a point on them, you pull even. But really, you need to win this thing in the first 60, not go to overtime, get two while they get zero, and then you move ahead of Detroit in the standings. Ideally, you get a little help from the Islanders tonight who play the Rangers, and they could even be tied for the playoff spot both ways, third in the Metro and as the main wild card. Got to have it tonight. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah, they've done this in short order and over the long haul, where they had such a bad streak at the beginning of January, where you have to do something magical, like the Nats did in 2019, right? Where they got off that terrible start. You have to play 600 plus baseball in order to qualify for the postseason. Well, they did that to their credit. The Caps were bad enough where you have to have an outstanding stretch to get back in it. Well, now they're in the middle of a bad stretch where you're hanging on the edge of a knife here, right? You're as close as you could possibly be to being an afterthought and have three or four teams ahead of you. Pittsburgh, I mean, the Flyers are imploding, but there's a number of teams that are right there competing with you. You basically, now it comes down to this, where you can't have a fluky bounce go against you. You can't have any bad luck. You painted yourself into this corner. It's pretty critical. If it's going to happen, then it needs to start right now to sort of stem the bleeding, turn the tide. Most importantly, probably, is to play good hockey, right? Which they haven't really done here over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, because if you get into the playoffs because a bunch of teams collapsed, it's not going to feel like the same accomplishment if you didn't handle your business. But if they just string together two wins, that could be tonight against Detroit and then Thursday night against the Buffalo Sabres. 4 points in those two games, they'll be squarely right back in a playoff spot. And all the numbers right now that are against them that say there's a 30-some percent chance they get in will now be over 50% going into the final three games of the season. But all that matters is they got to win a hockey game. They've lost six in a row. Out of their last 12 points potentially in that stretch, they've gotten just two loser points with losses beyond regulation. So they absolutely have to stop the bleeding this evening. The Nationals were able to do that in San Francisco last night. They've played really well out at Oracle Park the last few years. They've won series out there the last two seasons. They seem to hit well in that ballpark for some reason. And last night they got it going early. The first of their eight runs in the second inning, they scored three times in that frame. They roped out 10 hits. Lane Thomas, three hits, drove in three. First bolt of the year. He's got now 7 hits in his last 10 at-bats.
Right-hander delivers. Breaking ball hit in the air to deep left down the line. This one way back. Going. Gone. Goodbye. Bang. Zoom goes Lane Thomas. Straight away left field. A line drive home run. It's his first of the year.
Very surprising. Very good start to the season for Trevor Williams.
Two starts now.
Second straight good outing for him. One run over 5 innings of 3-hit ball. Not missing a whole lot of bats. Only struck out a couple, but he is 2-0 in two starts with a 2.6 ERA for a team that's 4-6.
Yeah, baseball, man. They're basically Trevor Williams and six. I mean, I'm kind of sticking it up, but go figure. You know, like that's the beauty of this game. That's why it's good luck predicting it. Good luck figuring out. You're going to see stuff. Now, at the end of the year, I bet you Trevor Williams isn't their best pitcher, but through two baseball weeks.
Well, I'll bet you in a week and a half, he's not their best pitcher.
Yeah, there you go. He might even be their best pitcher named Trevor if they call someone up from the minor leagues that I don't know about. But credit to him, man. A couple of really good starts. Mixing the changeup, which looks pretty good. I thought Derek Law was good last night. That's as good as he's looked. Three strikeouts and a couple innings pitched. But yeah, it looked like they were the bell of the ball, these Nationals, with Lane Thomas spanking it around the yard.
Last couple of
Trey
games,
Lipscomb, too.
Two straight wins for them, right? The Sunday finale against Philadelphia, and now this game out in San Fran last night. So back-to-back Ws. The bullpen's been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Derek Law last night, two scoreless. Floro had a scoreless inning. Four shutout for the bullpen after they were great on Sunday afternoon behind Mackenzie Gore. Back-to-back decent starts as well. They're still not getting length enough to call them quality starts, which by definition is six innings or more and three runs or fewer. But a couple of five-plus starts these last couple of times where your starter was better than the opponent's. And last night that meant Williams outpitched reigning Cy Young Award winner Blake Snell for the San Francisco Giants. You mentioned Lipscomb, the rookie from Tennessee, the Frederick native. Three hits and three steals last night. First time a Nationals rookie's ever done that before. So good to see him. He had been really scuffling and on a bad stretch at the plate. But respectable enough. 265 average, 640 OPS. He's fit in fairly well at
looks,
this point.
Looks like he belongs, right? That's probably where he should be. At back of the order, playing decent defense, creating some havoc when he gets on base, using the athleticism. That's a nice start. You build on it.
How will you feel if the Commanders don't draft the quarterback that you want at number two? I want to get into that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
G&D on the Fan, Darris and Ryan on the production. Thank you much for making this show part of your day. Seems like folks are digging in on a quarterback that they like as a draft prospect, as we're now 16 days away from the NFL draft, the Commanders being on the clock at number two. So the more research you do, whether that's going back and watching games, which are readily available online, or a lot of reading that you're doing, or just whoever your favorite draft analysts and experts are telling you to like. People are finding someone that they prefer. What I'm curious about, Danny, is what happens for people if the Commanders don't draft the guy you want? Whether that's you're a Daniels guy and they take May or vice versa, or maybe you're okay with either one of those two and then they draft McCarthy. I wonder if with a new general manager that everybody thinks is good at this and is entrusted now with running this organization, is the response, by and large, in the fan base going to be, okay, they picked their guy, wasn't my guy, don't care at all, go get him? Or is there going to be more consternation and annoyance than that, where you're kind of tracking every snap for Drake May and Detroit, I guess it would be like New York, let's say, or you're seeing everything Jaden Daniels is doing in New England, maybe. And if he has two touchdowns in his first two drives, you're going, dang it, I told you we should have taken him. I wonder what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I think the overwhelming majority of fans are going to be, hey, this is what the new regime wants. Because we saw that with Rivera and company. And they hadn't earned the stripes that Peters and company have. Right? I know Peters has never been the head decision maker, but he's been involved in some pretty good organizations. Rivera was there when Cam Newton was great that time and is awful at personnel stuff. And Carolina couldn't wait to get rid of the guy after Washington beat him. It was like, that's the low point, go away. And then, of course, Washington hires him.
And we also saw, to an extent, that endorsing the current boss man thing because of his track record with Peters picking Dan Quinn.
Yeah, totally.
Remember when, for the vast majority of Commanders fans, you weren't really excited about Dan Quinn because, let's face it, he's Ron Rivera in a lot of ways, right? Now, you might be a more inspirational, motivational, better version of them, but you find them, as I like to say, in the same aisle at the grocery store. They're right next to each other. If you're picking up one when you run into Food Lion, the other one's looking at you when you grab it off the shelf. But people were okay with the hire because it was Adam Peters' hire, because it was Josh Harris's search. And there was a little bit of, if I think Josh Harris is going to be a good owner, or maybe more importantly, if I am an in Adam Peters we trust guy, then I gotta let this rock and see what happens.
So I do think that that's a huge factor. So there are gonna be people that are, you know, that fancy themselves draft nicks or, you know, online experts or whatever you want to call it, like the smart guy among your friend group who watches all the YouTube videos and whatever, who will be mad if it's Daniels over May or vice versa, or be mad if it's McCarthy, or mad if it's just mad, you know, right? If it's not the thing that they said was going to happen or wanted to happen, it doesn't materialize. That's fandom, that's sports, that's normal, right? But I think for a lot of us, I could say for me, I try to take my sort of emotional and my own evals out of it as best I possibly can. And here's what I mean. I recognize that I am not a professional evaluator of quarterbacks. I also recognize that the guys that are ain't good at it either. And this is such a low shooting percentage thing. And there's a million and one factors as to why something works or it doesn't. Like, if you could have Doctor Strange's Infinity Stone with using the Eye of Agamotto, and do all the different scenarios. You take Jaden Daniels first and you play out the scenario, see what happens, and you go back and do Drake May. Jaden Daniels might be successful somewhere else if he wasn't here because of X reason that we never even think about, right? Or Drake May could be great somewhere else but then be bad here. You never know. So the point to me is the process, the mission of, do we have a young quarterback that doesn't just fit Cliff Kingsbury for a year that we think is sustainably going to be the best possible? You take your shot at it. If it doesn't work, let's do it again in a couple of years. Seems like this group gets that. So I don't have any venom if they take the guy that's quote-unquote not my favorite. I wonder how many fans will be that way versus how many will be, I'm mad because they didn't listen to my Twitter account and I said May. And like, okay. You know what I mean? I wonder how many will be in that category.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that this has gotten to a point where fans are going to like actively root against the player because they didn't want that guy picked. Like, I think that happened when there was this war within the fan base of sorts with Griffin and with Cousins, where there were like never Kirkers, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Where that you liked Robert Griffin and you were mad that he ended up on the bench and it was Kirk's team, according to Jay Gruden. And so whatever he did after that wasn't good enough, and you hated his guts and you hated anybody who liked him or thought he was playing well. Like, that was such a rare situation. You had to be here back then to remember it. But those guys were drafted in the same year, mm-hmm, in 2012. You know, they both played for the team. I think it's different than just two prospects that were never here. Like,
agreed.
No one, yeah, should be that in on, that committed to one of these guys. Unless you're an LSU or a North Carolina fan, neither's done anything for you. Jaden Daniels might be great. Drake May could be great. I guess if you love Michigan football, then J.J. McCarthy's put some pelts on the wall for you. But nobody should really be entrenched. So I do think it's different. Your point that you made, by the way, I want to go back to, is interesting. When you say, like, I'm not an expert. Being an expert in this field gets you nothing. You know what I mean? That and a couple, yeah, of bucks gets you a pack of gum. The best in the world at this are guessing. Bill Belichick, over the last several years, was horrendous at drafting football players. There's probably nobody smarter on planet Earth when it comes to coaching football, and for a while, putting teams together was his forte. He was, mm-hmm, pretty good at it. He's been terrible at it. I also go back to when we were trying to figure out who was going to be the coach here. I'm not an expert is not good enough for me. Of course you're not. We're not experts on anything. Nobody has all the information on anything they ever give an opinion on.
That's true.
You just don't. Anything in politics, anything you think about what a president is doing, what the local PTA is doing, what the school board did last week. You're not an expert, but you're working with the most information you have. Our buddy Kevin Sheehan, who hosts over on the Team 980, who I love and have been listening to for years, he came on our show a couple months back. Was during the coaching search, mm-hmm, and I remember I asked him, like, who do you want? And he's like, I don't know. I don't have the information. I'm paraphrasing. But I remember, like, I was just like, if you remember, I was taking it back. I'm like, wait a second. You don't have a preference? You don't have any dog in this fight? You don't have a horse in this race? And he's like, no, they're doing all the work. Well, no kidding. But who do you want to be the coach of the team? Who do you want to be the quarterback of the team is a pretty specific question to each individual. I'm not suggesting that you're definitely right, but I think when it comes to not being an expert, that's irrelevant. Nobody's an expert on anything. Everyone should still be able to make the best decision for them based on what do you think works, what you've seen, what you've studied. Yes, we don't get to sit in on the meetings. The most important things are not at our disposal. It's why where the teams get this right at a 39% clip, let's say, we probably get it right at a 26% clip. I'm not asking anyone to be an expert. I think that's an important distinction.
No, I think it's fair. I guess my logical sort of chain is, they, even with all the info they don't know, even with the limited info I have, I don't know. I have a preference, but I'm not going to be outraged, right? Like, it's easy in retrospect to be like, I can't believe the Bears took Mitch Trubisky over both Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. That's a pretty stupid pick, and they traded up to do it. That's pretty bad. I thought so at the time, too, by the way. But, you know, sometimes they work out. Like, sometimes you're the Atlanta Falcons, and you give more than the value to trade up for a receiver. That, by the way, I read the other day, speaking of Bill Belichick, he famously said a guy named Jonathan Baldwin would be every bit as good as Julio Jones. That's, like, in a couple books and a couple stories. So things like that, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But I guess the point I'm making is I want the process to be right, the process to be sensible. And if it is, I will absolutely live with the result. Now, if this Peters Newmark group swing and miss as often as Rivera and Mayhew, who's still here, and I can't believe it, but as long as they start having that kind of batting average, we'll reassess and I'll have my gavel slam on them. But that's going to take some time to do. At this stage, I've liked what they've done in free agency. Their search process, although it didn't end up with the coach that I would have likely ended up with, I see the merits of it, right? Because they look at the staff that they've built. Look at the diversity there in terms of younger, up-and-coming, ascending coaches, guys with former head coach experience, guys with offensive coordinator experience being bumped down to offensive assistant. They've done a lot of layering that I've really, really liked. I like the Newmark hire. They've done enough deposits in the bank for me to go, okay, as long as the process is good, they may come to a result that's one pick different than mine, a.k.a. I would take Daniels, you would take May. If they take May, I'm not going to be angry. Like, you know, I just can't get there to anger. Even if it's McCarthy, I couldn't get to anger. I go, I wouldn't do that. But, you know, I'll give it a chance to fail before I slam the gavel, I guess is what I'm saying.
The fact that you won't be angry if they take McCarthy is shocking to me. Because you think he stinks.
No, I don't think he stinks. I think I could never take him in the top five.
You think he stinks. When we first started talking about him going in the top 10, you thought, you said he stinks.
No, I was doing shtick. Here's what I have said, and I will continue to try to make this point. This is the real point. I couldn't, if I'm GM Danny Ruye, take him in the top five. I would absolutely be a team that has a good situation and trades back into the first round in the 20s or something like that to take McCarthy if I had a good situation for him to walk into. I could not, in good conscience, do a top five pick on that dude. That doesn't say stinks to me.
Yeah, well, originally you said he stunk. You've softened your stance maybe on J.J. McCarthy a little bit. But so is everybody else, in fairness, as he skyrockets up boards, including every general manager in this process who likes him a lot more. I want to open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines on this at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067 here on Grant and Danny. If they don't draft the guy that you want, or maybe more importantly, if they draft the guy that you think is going to be a bust or that you've decided is just not a good option, how will you respond to that, and will it take you a little while to get over it, or 10 minutes after the pick, are you on to the next? 800-636-1067, Grant and Danny on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every year for the NCAA tournament, me and buddies get in this pool where we draft players from the tournament, and then you get a point for every point they score. You start with the entire tournament field, snake draft style. There were 14 of us that played this year. I bring this up, Danny, because a dude in the pool this year had this strategy where he drafted all Purdue players. So you get six picks total. I think it's five players. No, there's six players each. And then we also draft a team to win it all.
Mm-hmm.
He took six different players from Purdue every time he was on the board. So he had like the first pick, he got Edie, came back, got their second, you know, then their third, and kind of so
he probably had a great chance to win the whole thing then, didn't he?
If they made the run.
Yeah.
He destroyed everybody.
Yeah.
It was one of the great strategies I've ever seen in my life. But they normally lose immediately.
Well, because you obviously you go all in and they Purdue it. I mean, they lost in the first. By the way, here's your best bet. You got to sacrifice a year to do it. If you're a one seed, lose to a 16, then the following year you win the natty. Or right. You get close to it, I guess.
Matt Painter's boys have not had a track record of being trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, I guess Edie or something, he said, I'm going to do this. So he takes all Purdue players, and then he had them to win the national championship. So he would have got that win,
mm-hmm.
plus the win on the points. He ended up with 483 points. The next highest scorer was 342 for the tournament. So I would say that worked out pretty well.
That was effective.
For him. I thought I was smart. I went with a bunch of guys from like Arizona and Tennessee. Well, needless to say, I did not finish in the month.
It didn't work.
This year. Let's go to Greg, who's in Reston. If the Commanders take the QB prospect at the top of the draft board that you're rooting against them taking, how are you going to operate after the draft? What's up, Greg?
Guys, at this point, I think no matter who they take, I will just feel released. I have absorbed way too much content on this draft, and I could write a paper both for or against May or Daniels.
Yeah.
I think I'm a Daniels guy, but as soon as they would draft Jane Daniels, I would hear Grant, pressure to sack ratio doesn't throw over the middle, and then I would start imagining Drake May as the next Justin Herbert, Josh Allen combo. And then as soon as they would draft Drake May, I'd start thinking we just lost out in the next CJ Stroud. I am so broken by this process and all the analytics that I am just ready for the relief of finding out who they're going to draft once and for all.
But the nerves feel good, don't they, Greg?
That's a quarterback, bro.
Where the air is crisp.
Yeah.
The number two pick, baby. One of the great quarterbacks in the country being added. My buddy was texting me yesterday about the Caps game tonight, how nervous he is and how he's just not ready for this. And if they lose, the season's probably over. And I said, this is great. To be a Caps fan on April 9th in this season that was supposed to be a building year and to have these anxieties and these nerves of playoff hockey, basically, at the end of the year, I feel the same way about the quarterback situation. Yeah, it's excruciating.
You could be the Raiders right now, who won a quarterback too, but they're, what are they, 11th or 12th or 13th? Yeah. I can't remember what. Yeah.
The quarterback will be picked for them. Whoever's the whole thing gets picked over. You're going in the candy aisle 2 weeks after Easter, basically. You know, a week after Halloween to try to get something that you want. It's just whatever didn't get grabbed is the last thing that's there for you on the shelf. So is this nerve-wracking? Are parts of this exasperating at this point? Absolutely.
Yeah, because you know that if it's wrong, I don't have a better way to say it, you're wasting 2 or 3 years.
How do you think Adam Peters feels? It's your first time running your own shop. It's your first opportunity to prove that you could do this. And you, look, he knows he can do it. Whether he gets this right or wrong, you're going to get quarterbacks wrong
sometimes. And he's already shown you some pretty good aptitude and what they've built here in terms of free agency roster turnover.
But what I'm saying is,
no, you're right.
This is at best, if you're great at this, you get it right like 48% of the time or something, right? But everyone's going to be judging you, and every fan's thought is you're either good or you're not based on if you take the right quarterback at two. How do you think he's feeling? In this imperfect process, in this crapshoot where he's trying to determine one of these guys might be C.J. Stroud and the other one might be a complete bust that makes you look like a fool. Good luck. We just get to talk about it, and a couple callers call in and say, you guys were wrong on him, and we go, yeah, good point.
You're right. Yeah, I was wrong about that.
I mean, Adam Peters has to find a new gig and move the family in a couple of years, potentially. I'm overstating it some. Kenny's in Waldorf. What's going on?
Hey, guys. I think what you said, Grant, earlier probably shined the brightest light on the real underlying question when you said you were kind of astounded that Kevin Sheehan didn't have an opinion, right? And what to me, what that shows is, I mean, your whole job, what you do is to have an opinion on things. And the people who probably call into this show or listen to sports radio are such a small percentage of the average fan base that really you're not getting an actual picture of who actually cares about any of this. At this point, I've heard about quarterbacks for so long, it really doesn't make a difference. If it was me, I'd trade the pick. Honestly, I don't even care. We could, you know, build a team for the long term because we've had a quote-unquote generational talent before, and we saw where that got us. So, you know, the sports industry, you guys got to make content and keep, you know, stuff on the radio.
True.
But at this point, I don't think most people really even care who we go with. We just want a quarterback.
I can't imagine thinking that way, but as you said, our lives are different. And to be clear, because now it sounds like there was a shot at Kevin, that was not my intention. My point is, Kevin has a quarterback preference. It's Jaden Daniels, from what I can gather. This was when they were picking a coach, and everyone was like, I like this guy, I like that guy. And when he came on with us, I said, who do you think they should hire? And he's like, I have no idea. I don't really have a preference. And I was just taken aback by that, because I'm like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about for 20 hours a day right now, or a week at this point? But my point was just that the argument, whenever it's convenient for anybody, like, I don't care if it's Daniels or May, because I don't know. Neither does Adam Peters. Neither does Bill Belichick. Nobody knows. Anyone who tells you they know is wrong. But what do you do in every other aspect of your life?
Make the best choice you can.
When you're buying a car, when you're buying a house, you don't know what the best purchase is. I bought a house. I already need more yard because my kids are running around, and we got 3 kids now. And I just, at the time, I made the best decision I could.
Yeah, I got to replace the furnace. I don't know that I would have gone through with this.
you should always have a preference or a thought, right? And at quarterback, I think everyone probably has some type of preference. What are you going to do if they go with the other guy? You got to prepare yourself for that possibility for sure. Max Chadwick of PFF joins us next on G&D.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.